With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, welcome to Good Job, where we interview inspiring people from the music industry. We follow their journey from their very worst job to present day and find out what makes them them. That roar was from singer-songwriter Kelly Lee. Kelly Lee has had an amazing career, touring the world singing backup for singers like Leona Lewis and Adele, as well as being the uncredited singer on 2 number one singles in the UK.
I shed quite a few tears about that, to be really honest. I felt frustrated and broken, and I thought, how can you be that disrespectful to be using my voice to further your message and career, but I'm not relevant enough for you to even want to mention.
In this episode, we chat to Kelly about her views on success, how she's now pursuing her music under her own record label, and why it's now her time to walk the red carpet in her own right.
Rawr.
We start the podcast the same way every time. What was your very worst job?
Definitely working in a clothes shop. And it was my second day of working in this clothes shop when I was about 16. And basically the clothing curtain, the changing room clothing curtain, caught fire just very lightly. So yeah, that wasn't a very good day. Definitely got fired that later on that day.
How did it catch fire?
Basically, it was the first day, it was a Saturday, and there was sort of a girl that had been working in the shop for a long time with this woman. Well, it was her new shop in Crystal Palace, and she'd had a place in Brixton. And the other girl was basically worked there for so long that the owner, she was going to let her do like management. And I was like new Saturday girl. And she basically went off and left us on the Sunday to go and speak to her investors and was bringing them back. And then it was quite cold that day. So we put the heater on and there was no one in the shop. So we'd be like trying on clothes and stuff. And then basically she put the heater, I'm not taking the blame for that, too close to the curtain, but we didn't pay attention to it. And then as the owner walked in with the investor, she saw as the curtain started smoking and lightly was about to catch fire. Sort of, it started smoking. It was like just pre-flames, and ran over and put it out, and she was not best pleased. She actually did pay me for the Saturday's work. Can you believe it?
She paid you after all that.
I know. Yeah, she was very nice about it, but I think any time I went to walk past that shop, I would cross the road for fear.
Could you have imagined all the amazing things you've worked with, like some of the biggest names in the industry? You've set up your own record label. You have all these new singles. Could you have imagined all this at that point in your life?
No, absolutely not. And it's so nice you put it that way, because I don't often think of it like that. I, you know, often think about what I need to achieve next and what I haven't done, and this needs to be better and blah, blah, blah. So I don't often think about it. And actually, yeah, if I go back there, I would be kind of blown away that I was doing this and having this chat with you now. And it's crazy. It's sort of crazy how life works out.
So let's go back to the beginning. Tell me about where your love for music started and how you got into it in the first place.
Music's always been, it was always in my family. My mum was a singer, my uncle was a singer, my uncle was a drummer. It was the most free thing we could do. It was freedom of expression. I mean, I grew up quite poor, so we didn't have a lot of money in the house. So singing and creating was you know, a sense of also escape and just sort of enjoying the day. Like, we loved music, and I think that's where I was most comfortable with myself, is when I was singing or doing something that was musically creative or listening to amazing music. Like, my mum's friend gave me a Prince mixtape when I was quite young, and I loved that. It was like new power generation. It's like Diamonds and Pearls, Thieves in the Temple, Raspberry Beret. So all those songs, just like, I could imagine being there listening to these songs. And yeah, it's just where I found myself the most comfortable, really.
And did you do any singing training?
I kind of jumped into it as a kid, but then I did at the age of 14. I had a singing teacher called George Tormann, who I saw as like, just was a really, like, I found really inspiring, and he really looked out for me. And that was when I was at college, and I had lessons with him from about 14 to 16. And he got me to sort of find my voice, because I could be a bit timid. And I think he helped me unlock some of that kind of space and stuff. And yeah, so I had lessons in 14, 16, then on and off till I was 18. And then from 18 onwards, I kind of just did a lot of self-teaching and self-discovery of my voice and breathing technique. And then in the last year, I got a new singing teacher, and she's been really awesome and done a lot of like straw work and stuff. And she's really found a place for my voice to be really, really free. This Voice Unlocked of Lucy. She's just been really awesome at just finding how my voice works. Because I feel one of the things I struggled with is that I didn't find a lot of singing teachers who understood my voice. So I've got a really big voice, and I've got a really big range, and it can be very heavy. And so I found some teachers who didn't know how to utilize the heaviness in my voice and were trying to put it in different places, and it just didn't work for me. So that's been really awesome to find Lucy this last year or so, because it's like she understands the exercises I need for my voice, because everyone's different. You know, we like the way Absolutely. The physiology is and everything. And I just don't think it's necessarily a one size fits all. I mean, we do know basic singing technique stuff that works and good warm ups and stuff, but it's like a thumbprint. We've all got different vocals, really.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. And it's something that I feel like so important as a teacher to like make sure that you don't just do the same thing for every single person. There are things, as you say, like that can be put across many different pupils, but it's so important to adapt to everyone's voice, because everyone wants a different thing as well. Everyone wants to sound differently, and they have an idea in their head of what their voice is. So there's no point in trying to be like, I don't know, making like an R&B singer sound like an opera singer. They don't want to do that. Like, or giving them opera technique. So yeah, you have to really, really be careful with how you're teaching and adapt, I think. So you started as a backing singer for many very cool people, like Adele and Leona Lewis, is that right?
Yeah, I was in the same class as Leona at college, and we just kept in touch. And then she just messaged me out of the blue one day and was like, I need some new BVs for something. Are you free? And I was like, yes. And she was like, have you got someone that you like to work with? And my best friend Katie at the time, who's like done amazing stuff, she's an awesome singer. I was like, yes. And we went on to work with Lee for about a year and a half. So we did like her backing vocals on her Christmas album, which is really cool, One More Sleep. And then Art on Ice we did, and the Glass Heart Tour, and that was awesome because Lee's just like such a lovely person. So it was probably some of my favourite touring experiences. I was like with my best friend, and Lee's awesome and really, really cool. So it was just a really great year that was.
And how did it come about with Adele as well?
So with Adele, I'd actually been doing session singing for a while with two guys, and they've got a company called Replay Heaven, and Hal Ritson got a shout from Adele's management at the time saying they were looking for some new BVs, and Adele wanted some fresh people. So I just got the call. Like, I hadn't been like putting it out there. I really wanted to do it. I really wanted to do BVs. Like, I did something when I was at college once as like a choir for Westlife, and we did like TV, and it was like, oh my God, this is so cool. And like, we'd like rehearse for hours so we could sound awesome, and like the choir leader, she'd like made us all blend and everything. And then when we went live, they were like, no, you're just miming to track, but just just sing it like it is real. So we were all gutted. But so anyway, I was like, I got the buzz from that. I was like, I want to do more BVs. And then I got the call for Adele, and Adele was kind of sort of big at the time, but it wasn't it wasn't like Adele, it was like Adele. And yeah, so the first performance we did was the Raw Variety performance on TV. We did Rolling in the Deep. And that was like her first outing of the record, her first performance of the record, I think. And then
that's so cool, that, though. No, now knowing where it, that is.
Yeah, that was so cool. And then suddenly everything blew up and we were on tour and it was the Grammys and Oscars and what wow. have you. And it was a bit like, whoa. And it was my first time on tour as well. And it was a crazy, crazy experience. I'd never been to America before. And we did this big tour in America and we were all over the place and tour buses. And yeah, whirlwind.
You must have learned loads from that.
Oh, absolutely. Not just even like stage performance. And I mean, like, I performed on stage anyway, so not that, but I mean, like, in terms of like a big artist situation and the professionalism that comes with that. Like, we did a few TVs and like The Voice of Holland and all random things like that. And but also management and labels and the band and tech and crew and how things need to work and how organized you need to be and how if something's not been organized right, how it's like a snowball effect and it just messes mm-hmm. up everything. And also how exhausting it can be. It's like the best you... I love touring. I think it's awesome. I really get a buzz out of it, but it also is completely exhausting. You get off the tour bus in some random new city and then have a shower somewhere, if it's like a venue shower, if it's like a smaller tour or whatever, and then sound check, and then you've got the gig, and then you pack up, and then you get a tour bus and you go to another city again, and you do like three times in a row till you get a day off. And then when you get a day off, you're like, well, I'm somewhere I've never been before, so I should probably go and have a look outside, but I can't do anything with my body. So it's yeah, it's insane.
You also were an uncredited artist on some major number one singles. How did that come about?
So again, that was going back to How Ritz and Replay Heaven. I sung with, so it's Richard Adlam and How Ritz, and they own Replay Heaven, and I sung with them for years. I sang Cry Just a Little for the Bingo Players as well. That was one of the first ones to sort of go big. And it basically, people wanted remakes of certain samples that they couldn't get the mechanical clearance to use, but they could use the publishing. Mm-hmm. So it would have to be resung. And I worked with Hal for like years, just in the studio. That's one of the reasons why I credit him. I'm so good in the studio, because unless I got it right, I wasn't leaving the session. So I got very good at making sure I was doing a good job so I could be done. but he's like, because the stuff that we were doing, the Replay stuff, is so close. So like, I Got You for Duke Dumont, Jax Jones, that I sang, was a Whitney Houston sample. And it's not just listening to the way she sung. They would make sure that like the sound was right, so they would have different plugins or whatever the equipment was that might have been used to record that vocal in the 80s, so it would sound a certain way. And yeah, so like when I did I Want to Feel for Second City, that's Toni Braxton, it was like, baby, oh baby, and just like I would hear Toni, and then I would do, and then I would sing it, and then I'd hear Toni, and then I would sing it, and just each time just keep trying to refine the way I delivered that vocal so I would sound as close to her as possible. But then also, because of my, like, mentioned physiology again, I'm not sure if it's exactly like face shape or something about my sound works for like a Whitney or a Toni Braxton or that kind of thing. So it was in my remit there. And I listened to like Toni Braxton and Whitney Houston growing up loads anyway. So, but that's not how I ended up singing those tracks. I mean, I sung record dance records for years. And then just for some reason, that year of 2014, a couple of those records that I sang all blow up. So I Got You went to number one. I Want to Feel went to number one a month after. I sang Love Too Deep for Eric Dawn Redondo. That went top 40 about a month after that. Wow. So it was kind of crazy because it was like bam, 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 bam. But as you said, I was completely uncredited. I was just the voice of these things. So it was definitely a weird experience for me, because if you come from a background like I did, where finances are not, you don't have something to rest on and you don't have something there to save you, you've got to work your backside off. Singing was my chosen career path. So I sang backing vocals and I sang functions and I sang weddings and I sang session jobs and, you know, I sang and I sang and I worked. Mm. But I always wanted to be an artist, but you need to take time out, and you can't do those things if you want to be an artist, because it's too confusing. Like, you're either a backing singer, you're either a session singer, or you are an artist, and they are completely separate things, even the way you look at utilizing your voice. But the journey that I had grew my voice. Like when I was doing functions and weddings and whatever, I was having to sing Aretha, Chaka Khan, Whitney, Kylie, you know, whatever. And I really attribute that about to some of my voice growth, because I was walking on stage and singing Respect, you know, every other day. But you kind of realize when you start coming over to be an artist that you have to step away from all that and start finding who you are. But also you have to be financially okay to be able to do that. So for me, obviously, for a long time, I was too scared of stepping completely away from that world, because I'd got so good at it and I had such a reputation in it that I was getting jobs and getting things coming in, which was awesome. But then obviously sort of feeling a bit confused and a little bit frustrated as well, because I wanted to do me, but I didn't know I could step away. And in 2013, I had a car crash and I was put a wheelchair for a bit. I had a severely prolapsed disc and I couldn't walk. And that's when I got asked to sing I Got You and I Want to Feel. And I did those sessions sitting down in a chair because I couldn't stand.
Wow.
And at the time, Hal was like, we need your voice, so let's just make it work. And so the end of 2013, I basically couldn't do anything. I was in bed in agony. And then it was 2014 that the songs blew up and then everything shifted.
How did that accident affect your mental state in your singing and where you felt like you were in your life?
It affected me a lot because I was a bit of a workaholic and I was doing so well with what I was doing in terms of the BV world and that kind of stuff. And, you know, I was pushing. And then at the same time, I was like completely randomly making like an album in Poland as well. So anytime I had a spare moment, I was flying to Poland to like do this album and everything. And when the accident happened and I could do nothing and I was stopped and I was stuck. At the time, I kept getting misdiagnosed. No, they didn't know what it was because I didn't have an MRI scan. And we were like, some doctors sort of don't know how long you'll be till you get better. It's like, how long's a piece of string kind of thing. So that was kind of mentally really difficult. And then also I felt like I saw people in the industry who really, really cared about me, who are my really close friends. And also the darker side of it, it was like people that didn't really care unless it was, you know, you kind of find that in like creative world. I think that's quite tough. Like one of my best friends, she's in musical theatre, and we talk about like the ups and downs of the industry and how sometimes people can be with you if they feel like, you know, if you're going to benefit their career somehow, they're super lovely to you. And if you're not, then they couldn't give a flying F. So for me it was a real difficult mental time because I suddenly was incapacitated, couldn't do anything, couldn't do my usual go at it hard work, do all this kind of stuff, and was just stuck, and then stuck with me and my thoughts and what I actually want with my life kind of thing. But I really believe it meant to happen. It was meant to be, that thing, because I was also on tour with Jessie J at the time, and when I got asked to sing I Got You, if I had been well, I would have been completing the Jessie tour, so I might not have actually even been able to sing the record. I don't know. Who knows? So I think it happened for a reason, because after that accident, that was the end of my backing vocal days.
And I suppose you had that time to think about exactly what you wanted.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we all need that. I guess that's kind of also what your single's about. Taking time.
Oh, just for one day. Yes. Yeah, that day I was feeling kind of a bit exhausted and a bit overwhelmed. I've been running around again, like doing lots of stuff and doing lots of sessions for other artists as well, or other, you know, I do a lot in dance world, and I've been developing my own artist project on the side, and that's been going well and sort of just putting more and more into that. And yeah, just for one day I'd basically gone to the wrong studio location and was like 2 hours late for a session with someone new that I'd never met before, who turned out to be super sweet, Justin, and he was like, oh, it's cool, don't worry about it. And then I was just like, he was like, what do you want to do today, work on something for your project? And Just for One Day was born in that session. We just did it, and then yeah, it just flowed. It was a really great session. And then I went home and I recorded my own vocals. I love producing my own vocals. And then sent them back to Justin to put into the mix. And then, yeah. And then we have Just for One Day.
Yeah. There's a couple of lyrics I want to draw attention to, which I think are really cool. There's Let Your Feelings Feel. And I think that's kind of cool because none of us give ourselves the time to do that or allow ourselves to feel things. How did that come about for you personally, that lyric?
it was kind of that, really. I kind of, I'm better than I used to be in terms of my workaholicness-ish. I sometimes think, like, if I'm having a day where I feel a bit low or something, I don't always give myself that moment. And sometimes I think that's really important. When you're feeling mentally like you just need a little bit of a switch off or a break, that's as important as then pushing yourself forward sometimes, because before you know it, you can end up burnt out, and then you're actually not producing your best, you know, creativity or whatever, or you're not your best vocal. Like, if you're supposed to be recording something or whatever, and you're like, my voice is knackered, and you try and push through it, you're actually making your voice worse. And I suppose sometimes I didn't even think about it. I was writing it, it sort of just came. It's like that day I just knew I needed a break, really.
If you enjoy work as well, sometimes it's quite hard to do, or you get really excited about something and then it's like, oh, wait, I'm doing too much. It suddenly hits you. I don't know if that happens to you.
Yeah. I'm trying to be better now at just scheduling a moment and going, no. Because before you know it, like, you think it's just like, oh, there's just an hour here and then an hour there and then something there. And then before you know it, it's the whole day taken and you haven't, and then you're behind on like several other emails and going, oh my God. So I think it's really important. Rest time is just as important as work time. It just needs to be a balance. I mean, you learn that in like fitness training and stuff. Like, you go hard working out or something, you definitely absolutely need that recovery day for your muscles. Otherwise, it doesn't work. So why don't we have that for our minds?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey, this is the part where I give you a fun fact about our guest. Kelly Lee started out her career as a backing singer, but she's following in the footsteps of some other amazing artists. Mariah Carey, Sheryl Crow, Elton John, Katy Perry, Dave Grohl, John Legend, Mary J. Blige, and even Whitney Houston, the voice that Kelly Lee's is most often compared to, started out as backing singers before embarking on award-winning careers. Every episode, we have a set of quickfire questions. I'll leave you with that before the rest of the interview. So, our quickfire round, tea or coffee?
Tea.
Music or lyrics?
Music.
Cats or dogs?
Cats.
Creativity or logic?
Creativity.
Plane or train?
Plane.
Beer or wine?
Wine.
Sweet treats or savoury snacks?
I think I'm going to go savoury snacks. Mm.
City or countryside?
Countryside.
Matching or odd socks?
Matching socks, for sure.
Guitar or piano?
Piano.
Friday night in or Friday night out?
Now Friday night out, for sure.
Modern or vintage?
Vintage.
Black and white or Technicolor?
Technicolor.
Moose or mouse?
Mouse.
Yay. So you set up your own label, which is incredible. Tell me a bit about that and why you went down that route and what your plans are with your label and what you want to do with it.
Well, I set up my own label. It's called Music Core, music for music, and then core for the core strength that I had to rebuild after the car accident I had. But the reason why I did it is I sang another top 10 with James Hype in 2017. It's gone so fast. And that was More Than Friends on Vogue's Don't Let Go, a remake of that, which is one of my favourite songs ever. And that one had my name on it. So we went top 10 with that. So by this point, I'd sang two number one singles and a top 10. My voice is around a lot, but no one knows who I am really. Like, my name wasn't really there. And in all honesty, I just got frustrated because I was being inundated with requests from labels for me to sing vocals for producers. And I was kind of a bit like, well, what about looking at investing in me? Or, you know, I've got my own music here. And it was like, yeah, it's cool. But, you know, we really need you to do another big vocal for another DJ producer. And I just got really annoyed, to be honest. And I felt really agitated because, I mean, it's two things with those those songs that came out. I'm really proud of what's happened and everything happens for a reason. And I'm so, like, people thought I Got You was Whitney, who's one of my, Whitney is the queen to me. So to even have that, people think that made me feel so proud and honored because she is incredible. But then there gets to a point where it's like other people are making money and doing really well off of something that I'm singing, and I'm not getting as much credit or notice or input. So if I'm going to have any opportunity to be seen or to be heard, I'm going to have to set up my own label. And that's what it came down to, basically. It was a necessity and resilience to stay, to be heard and to be seen. Because it's also, I mean, there was a stat, I don't want to get her name wrong, but it's Vicky Bain. And she's like, does all data stuff within the music industry for women. And 20% of all signed artists in the UK are women. 20%, which is like, what? I mean, that's crazy. And
yeah,
like,
why would that be the case?
Just why? And I was frustrated. I mean, like, I love men. It's not a men bashing thing, but I know so many men who are signed or DJ producers who are walking in and out of record deals and stuff, and loads of artists or singers that have sung on those records that aren't being signed, who aren't being looked at, but are being emailed to write another top line or sing another feature. And it's like, well, when do we get that investment as well? And when do we get that recognition? So yeah, Music Core, I released my first single, Do You Want to Be Loved Like This, which was awesome. I wrote it with a guy called Eddie Jenkins and James Hype. And what I loved about James was was the first person that I'd worked with as a DJ producer that I'd sung something for. And he was like, let's get in the studio and do something for you. That meant so much to me because, you know, it'd been by this point like 2 to 3 years, and I'd done some other records for some other big producers who basically treated me like I was shit, basically, on their shoe, even whilst they were using my vocals for their records, and didn't want to acknowledge my presence, even though I wrote the song or co-wrote the song. And yeah, I shed quite a few tears about that, to be really honest. I felt frustrated and broken, and I thought, how can you be that disrespectful to be using my voice to further your message and career, but I'm not relevant enough for you to even want to mention? Yeah, so when James was like, yeah, let's get in the studio and write a song for you, I just was like, yes. And also, that's just like, I don't know, when you work in this industry, this is how people build. You do things and you like work with each other, and it's a stepping stone, and that's how great stuff happens. You work together as a team. But surprisingly, not that many people like to do teamwork. And you figure that out, and then you're like, okay, lesson learned. So the first single was called Do You Want to Be Loved Like This? And put that out. And a friend of mine, Chris Fade, is an amazing, amazing guy. He's one of those people who I talk like always is always giving a leg up and always shouting out someone, and always giving support. He's like one of the most positive, awesome people I've ever met. And he's a radio DJ for Virgin Radio Dubai. And I'd met him when I performed at a festival in Beirut, and he was always supportive. And he said, when you get your single, like, shout me. So More Than Friends was still really big. And in Dubai, they were playing More Than Friends all the time. And I had Do You Want to Be Loved Like This coming out. And he was like, we need to champion this record. It's an awesome record. So I was added to the Red Fest festival lineup, which was one of my favorite gigs ever. That was like, I don't know, 15,000 people or something. And I was on the bill with like Chainsmokers and Russ and then me. And like, it was awesome. And he championed Do You Want to Be Loved Like This? And he just tested it out. And he was like, I'm just going to put this on the show, see what happens. And then it went top 10 in Shazam out in Dubai, out there, all on my label. People were phoning into the station to request the song. And they were like, we love the Do You Want to Be Loved Like This song from Kelly Lee. And I was like, and he messaged me and he was like, we're not even pushing this hard. We've just played it and people love your music. You've got a fan base. You've got an audience. Yeah. And so that was the start of it, really, and which was amazing. And I part of me is gutted because if I did have like a major label behind me or something, we could have capitalized on that huge. Like, there's only so much I could do. I was still learning about Shazam, we basically said the single was coming out when it wasn't because we hadn't ingested it into the DSPs yet and all this kind of stuff that now I know about. Like, you need a 6-week lead time. If anyone's looking at releasing independently, you need at least 6 weeks lead time. Whereas we're like, yeah, we'll upload it, it'll be out in a week. No, that doesn't happen. So then I had to do a big apology online, being like, sorry, the single's not coming out this week. It's coming out, I think, next week or the week after.
What's the main difference vocally between having to sing a backing vocal or as a session singer and singing your own stuff?
For me, I think it's hugely different because when you're doing backing vocals for an artist, you're fitting into their world. So you're singing their sound, their style, the way they express, the way they deliver those notes. Like, I remember when I was doing Adele's BVs, like Rolling in the Deep, you know, we're making sure we fit exactly what she did, and like, you're gonna miss you, there's like something which is slightly like semitone out, and the way you deliver that, and you've got a blend, and mainly a BV has to be incredible at making the sound awesome but never ever 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 out singing or stepping out of their lane, because it's not about the BVs, it's about the main artist that's on stage, and you're there to back them up and support them throughout anything. If they decide to drop off and not sing that chorus, you guys have got to carry it whilst they do their ad libs and thing and come back in, and it's got to be a blend. When you sing for yourself, it's whatever you want as your freedom of expression. Like, I want to sing this bit in my head voice because it's supposed to be personal and it's supposed to be intimate and it's supposed to be sweet. And then when I get to there in that chorus, I'm going to use my full range and I'm going to do something that's huge, and then I'm going to bring it back down again. And you get to have fun with it. You get to go, oh, yeah, how am I feeling today? How do I want to sing this? What do I want as a delivery? And then you take inspiration from other artists that you hear that do things and you're like, oh, that's kind of cool. Like, maybe I can try and adapt something like that. Or you switch, shut everybody out and you're like, no, this is how I want to deliver it. You know, I think it's such a separate thing. And I think coming from BV world to be an artist world, and I know friends that have been BVs that want to be an artist and stuff like that, and you do have to separate them. They are completely different things. For me, you can't do both at the same time. I think it's amazing to do it. And if you want to stay a BV and be a BV, then awesome, because it's an incredible job. I mean, I loved that job. I did some of the most amazing things I've ever done in my life. But I wanted to be an artist and I wanted to sing my own songs, and I had my own message and something that I needed to say.
How much do you feel that you've found your own voice in comparison to having to sing in the style of other people?
Oh, massively. It's totally, it's my own voice. It's what I want to say. It's who I am. Like, Cotton Clouds is a sexy song, and it's about relationships, and it's, you know, we've been in that kind of like honeymoon period, and, you know, and then there's something like Just for One Day, which is about self-isolation and self-care. These are all my lyrics and this is my sound. I don't feel like there's anyone that I particularly fully sound like, and I take inspirations from lots of different artists, but this is me. This is my sound. It's, I call it anthemic pop. There's elements of soul in it, and elements of Indian places, and then elements of dance. And I feel like when I release these songs, and it sounds so dramatic, but I really do feel like I'm breathing, and I need it. I need it for myself to keep me going. And I'm already planning the campaign for the next single, and I feel that drive, and I love getting into the thick of it. So I couldn't go back. This is me now.
How much of your journey do you reckon is fate, and how much do you reckon is hard work?
I think you'll never know. I totally believe in things happening for a reason. Sometimes I feel like maybe I shouldn't work as hard as I do. I shouldn't push as hard as I do. And sometimes I should just sit back for a minute and just allow stuff. And if it's going to happen, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. Sometimes I get scared and I don't want to have that luxury. But then a lot of the work that I have done, like setting up my label and pushing here, and then going to that meeting and then meeting that person who's then connected me to this person that's then playlisted my single or something, then that's all part of the journey. So I think it's honestly both. I think it all plays hand in hand with each other, because, for example, for me to get, someone asked me this the other day and I hadn't thought about this in a really long time. How did I get my first session job? And I was like, how did I get my first session job? Which was to sing a songwriter's demo to pitch. And that was because I had a MySpace, and I completely forgot about MySpace. And then someone heard it who said to someone, oh, her voice might be good for your demo. And that's how that started, because then I sung for him and then he connected me to Richard Adlam, who's Replay Heaven. And then that, you know, and so then it goes. So then that's kind of a bit of fate, isn't it? It's fate that someone in Adele's team said, we want new BVs. We want someone that's not on the scene, who's completely different. And I happen to be working for the guy that he asked, who then said, I'd be good for it.
Mm. But then you were working in all those situations, and if you hadn't put something out on MySpace,
that's
in the
true.
First place, then that bit of work also helped you there.
I think, yeah, I just think we'll never know. I think things just play hand in hand. And I definitely think, I do think stuff that's meant to be will be.
So most people would say you've been pretty successful in your career. Do you feel like you're successful?
I don't know. Yes and no. I wrote a song which is really personal to me, which is going to come out later on this year, which I ended up writing about this. I had a really long chat with my parents, like about 4 hours. And we really delved into some stuff that we needed to talk about. And it did dawn on me when I think about where I've come from and my journey and the opportunities that I had, or lack of opportunities that I had, to where I am now, then yeah, I'm really successful and I'm really proud of myself. And if I see a younger me, you know, I'm living my dream. I wanted to be singing. I wanted to go around the world singing. I wanted to make money from singing. So yeah, I did it. I achieved my small dream. But then in terms of what I want to achieve as myself as an artist, I haven't got there yet. And there's still a lot more work to be done. And I'm still banging down certain doors. And I'm still going, hey, listen to my solo project, because I've got really good songs here. And I've got some demos here, which I know are bigger than my previous singles. But I'm trying to build momentum so that when I get to dropping those, that I'm going to have more attention on that, so that it doesn't feel like it just blows in the wind. It actually does something and people go, oh yeah, okay, actually Kelly Lee's project is actually really good. Maybe we might look at that or something. So I feel successful to get to where I've come from. And I hope that's inspiring to young people who may have been in similar situations, young females, because it's really hard for girls in the industry. And that's no woe is me for the female sex, but it's just a fact. It is, and it's still a lot of work to be done in gender equality. But where I want to get to, I'm not fully successful yet.
What do you define as success then? What will you have when you're successful?
That's a great question. I mean, the dream is a Grammy. Like, I'd love to win a Grammy. I mean, I was fortunate enough to walk the Grammy red carpet when I Got You was nominated, and was the most insane experience. It was the first time in front of like massive paparazzi, and there was like rows of them. And then this like woman's like, okay, if you just like to stand on that X, it's like really casual. And then me and Jax Jones, we just stood on this X, and then they were like, Kelly Lee, Jax Jones, Kelly Lee, Jax Jones. They were like flashing. I was like trying to look cool and sexy and like like a deer in headlights. And like, and then they would just stop, and it was like, and they're like, and she's like, okay, if you just like to stand on the next X, please. And then we'd go along to the next X, and it would happen again. And it's like, okay. And then they're like, pull a silly face. And I was like, so uncool. And then when you see like pictures like Katy Perry or Taylor Swift, or, you know, anyone like that, you're like, wow, you guys have got this down, because the way they make it look so effortless and stunning and everything, you're like, whoa.
Yeah, they've done it a lot though, I'm sure.
They've done it a lot, yeah. But that blew my mind. Like, I came off that red carpet and then I cried, because I was so overwhelmed, because it was such a dream since mine as a kid to get there and be there and to see it. And then I was like, okay, this is achievable. This is possible. So that gave me even more fire. It was like, all right, this isn't some kind of crazy fantasy as a kid sitting at home watching the Grammys, looking at, like, you know, Mariah Carey accept an award, or Prince, or Stevie Wonder, you know, like, this is actually something I could possibly make happen. So I've just got to work my butt off and make the best music I can possibly make that I believe in. And hopefully one day that will get respected.
So for you, what do you think makes a great singer?
Ooh, I love this question, because so personal, isn't it? It's so personal to our ears. I mean, for me, what makes a great singer is someone who makes you feel. And it is that. It's just a feeling conveyed through voice that you can't, you know. So for me, that's Whitney, that's Ella Fitzgerald, that's Norah Jones, that's Skin from Skunk Anansie, that's Fink, that's like Mariah Carey, like Music Box album, that's Rosie Gaines in Diamonds and Pearls with Prince, the way she delivers that, like it's a singer that touches you. Sam Cooke, like you listen to a Sam Cooke record and that is real music, like back in the day, analog, vintage. In fact, my other half, he's got a vintage studio to tape and it's called Talbot Studios. And singing in his studio and recording two tape. You got two takes if you're going to have takes because it's all on tape. So you need to deliver it right. Your dynamics, your pitch, your control, your feeling. That's real singing. Like, you know, I'm so used to working in the studio and working on my Logic and doing like whatever vocals and doing 10 takes and then just comping that take up. And, you know, I still work on my delivery and dynamics. I want everything to sound great. But, you know, there is an element of laziness there that I'm not like, I've got two takes and this better sound awesome. And also then the rawness of that. Like if you listen to some of those old records, there might be a vocal which is slightly out of tune or something, but it's the feeling of it. So I just think it's that. It's a real singer or vocalist knows their voice. It's their instrument. Like sometimes people say like, do you play an instrument or a musician and stuff? It's like, I wish I'd kept up piano as a kid, but my voice is my instrument and I've worked really hard on it and I've spent years with my voice and I've spent years learning my vocal because this thing sometimes controls me.
It's really difficult with the voice because we always think of it and we judge ourselves for our voice and it is... I don't know. I sometimes feel like it's like a little pet that sometimes like runs around and you're like, no, come back. I want you to do this today. And you have to train it and be like, no, you need to sit right now.
Yeah.
But also we judge it and we won't judge an instrument. We won't be like, oh, piano, why aren't you doing what you're told today? You just do it again. And if we can get into that mindset of it being like an instrument and just something that we need to do again and practice and learn, then it becomes also a lot easier mentally.
Yes, I definitely find that with singing, that there's more to it than I think people sometimes understand on the surface. But that is then why there's greats, and that is why there's people like, that is why Adele is so successful as well, because when you're in a room with her, like the first rehearsal that we did, and that was at in London Bridge. And she just sang in the room off mic, and oh my God, I had goosebumps all up my arm and I was like, whoa, like this is a voice, you know. And that's why so many people move by it, because when she sings some of those songs about those, that heartbreak that she went through, you feel it. And I think that's sometimes not appreciated enough, is that that is what the voice does. It should make you feel something.
What has been your greatest challenge in your life or career?
I think my greatest challenge has been with myself. I have been very insecure. I was quite badly bullied growing up a lot. Didn't seem to fit in into certain circles or groups or whatever. And I'm, you know, and at the same time, which probably I'm very headstrong and I'm very honest and I'm very direct, which probably didn't help because I'd be feeling insecure from these people would be like, you're not good enough. You need to be like this. But then at the same time, I wouldn't be like, okay, I'll wear that hat that you said I should wear. I'd be like, well, you and your stupid hat direction, I'm going to wear this hat, but I hope this hat looks good on me. So, you know, just going through these kind of emotions. And I even setting up my own label and stuff, you know, I really deal with insecurities and I'm much better with it now, but I still do, like, especially with social media and stuff. I'll post something and be like, well, I hope people flipping like this. And then at the same time, I'm like, well, I don't care because this is what I believe in, but I really hope I get enough likes today. And, you know, so I think that's been my biggest challenge, and I'm proud of myself and how I have pushed through that instead of allowing some of those comments and things to make me feel so small that I haven't done it. There's still times where I feel insecure and I'm like, I am so annoyed with myself, just get over it. But it's just a lot of pressure sometimes that you put on yourselves.
What advice would you give to people who are feeling a bit insecure or feel like they can't do things?
I think for someone who's feeling that, it will be worse if you don't allow yourself to do it. you might not even have to put the song out there, but just allow yourself to create, allow yourself to breathe, allow yourself to feel, allow yourself to do all those things that you have inside you. Because if you don't, you're keeping yourself locked up. And I think that's also why I end up doing stuff, is because my brain is overactive and I need to let stuff out that I'm feeling. Otherwise, I do feel like bogged down or clogged up, and I don't feel great. So yeah, I think just do it. And even if it's privately for yourself, even if you just create something in your room and you put it on your computer to watch back and you feel like you've had that freedom of expression, then great, because that might mean that the next thing that you do, you have more self-confidence to push yourself a little bit further or show someone else or upload it to your Instagram. And you never know what comes from that by just putting yourself out there. Because generally, I think a lot of us are going through some kind of ups and downs insecurity wise, especially with social media and the way the world is right now. It's so flashy. There's not a lot of allowance as much anymore. And I think people are actually crying out for more rawness, because when you open up about it, people do go, yeah, I'm feeling like that too.
Yeah, I think people feel like they need to be perfect all the time, because we see a lot of perfection.
Yeah.
All these shiny people.
Yes, exactly.
And you can see it, though, the way that art is moving. I feel like even within music, there was like a stage of time where everything had to be so perfect. And I feel like now people are looking more towards, as you say, singers who make you feel again. And it's getting a bit more like, oh, we don't mind if that's a little bit imperfect like it used to be. It's kind of hopefully getting over that hill a little bit more, and people just being them.
As soon as you're yourself, it just feels right, and people can sense it too. It's amazing what people can sense. It's like, just pick up if you're being honest or fake. And then also, if you find people don't like exactly who you are, then they weren't meant to be around you anyway. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Okay, what's been your greatest accomplishment on the other side of that?
I mean, I got you being Grammy nominated, having my voice. For me, that was a massive, massive, massive accomplishment. But I think really it has to be putting my own music out on my label, making my own music videos and all that kind of stuff. And each of it is a stepping stone onto something else. For me, that is my biggest accomplishment, because I'm finally doing what I dreamt of doing as a kid, and being my own artist and being myself. And I don't know where it's going to get to. I obviously hope, as we discussed, it goes to greater things. But I've connected with people through my music who've messaged me saying they love a song and it means something to them. And that's all I could ever really hope for with my own music.
If you could wake up tomorrow having gained one quality or ability, what would that be?
I would love to be able to fly to the sea and go into the sea in Croatia. I think
right now, for sure.
Yeah, right now, absolutely. I think a practical quality I would really love to have is more patience, because my impatience meter is terrible. That is a definite lack of quality on my part. I'm very impatient and quite impulsive. Like I said, I feel and have to do. And I think I would love to think less. So I overthink way too much. So I think that would be a quality I'd love to wake up in the morning and just be like, my brain goes ping and I'm like, oh, everything feels awesome. I'm not overthinking everything I just did.
Last question. If you had any advice for anyone entering the entertainment industry, what would it be?
Be brave, be bold, be yourself, and go for it. And also, network and work with a lot of people. Don't necessarily feel you have to stay in one group or be cliquey or things like that. Greatness comes from, I feel, supporting each other and other people supporting you. So grow a team, grow people you love to collaborate with, make your own movement, and be proud that you do it.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Bear. No worries. Thank you for having me. Bye.
Big thanks to Kelly Lee and John Bills for organising the interview. If you want to check out Kelly Lee's music, head over to www.kelly-lee, which is spelled L-E-I-G-H.com. You can also find all of her music on Spotify and YouTube. Don't forget to subscribe, rate and review us on your podcast app of choice. It really helps us share these amazing stories with new people. We love your feedback, so please do drop us an email at goodjob@bethroars.com. And if you would like to get early access to new episodes and support the podcast, please do head over to our Patreon at patreon.com/bethroars. Big thanks again to Kelly Lee and John, to James and Kazra at One Fine Play for the initial edits, and also massive thank you, as usual, to my co-producer Tom Court, who works super hard on these. And, of course, thanks to all you guys for listening.
Good job!
Rawr.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.